To heal one's broken body, frazzled nerves, or confused mind, one could take the drugs, as many do, or one could hop into the saddle and ride the horse. And so we ask, can one be healed by horse?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1368th edition of the Food Chain Radio Program. Or hey, perhaps you're among your friends way down there in Luganville who are tuned into the podcast as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, to heal our broken bodies, frazzled nerves, and confused minds, we Americans take drugs. We take lots of them. But what if we could be healed by horse? Now, had it not been for the fact that I was once healed by horse, I might have trouble taking the notion seriously. But I was once healed by horse. Way back when I was an inner-city, rabble-rousing community organizer, things got out of hand and just quit making sense. There were a lot of confusion cures available on the streets in those days, as there are today, but none of them appealed, and so I went home to Montana and took a job as a hired hand on a ranch. That ranch filled my days with hard physical labor and mental labor as well. I ate hungrily of the ranch meals and slept the deep sleep of the work well done. The big reward, however, came at the end of my workday. After the evening meal, I would saddle up my favorite gelding for a ride out into the lingering twilight of those great big Montana prairie skies. Though the horse and I never talked much, something must have been communicated because things began to make sense again. After the season was over, I returned to my big city life, healed by horse. Equine therapy is now claimed to be an effective therapy for physical, cognitive, emotional, and spiritual afflictions, including attention deficit, autism, conduct and dissociative disorders, dementia, post-traumatic stress, and many other related disorders. And so we ask, how might one be healed by horse? Well, here to help us round up an answer, we have Charlie Jenks, who is the founder of Connecting Vets with Horses at the Jean Kavami Center for Adaptive Riding in Felton, California. Charlie, welcome to the Food Chain.
Oh, hi, Michael. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, great to have you aboard. What is adaptive riding?
Well, adaptive riding is a location where they have equine therapy programs, you know, specific to people with disabilities. And the one you just referenced, Jean Kavami, the primary student or customer is children or young adults with autism and some with Down syndrome too. But there could be physical issues as well. They're equipped at this center, you know, with hoists or lifts to put people on a horse, and also many trained therapists and volunteers that help if a person's riding a horse. So there's potentially up to three assistance around that horse as well.
Well, I had the opportunity way back in Food Chain Radio number 1006 to interview Jean Kavami herself when her adaptive riding center was called Lichen Oaks. And I, of course, was completely flabbergasted by the Taj Mahal horse barn that she has there. My goodness, I'd move into that in a second.
Oh, I know. It's you feel guilty if you drop something or get, you know, dirt on the ground there. It's so beautiful. But you know, that location is one of the nicest horse facilities I've been in myself. But they're just some great big-hearted people there too. And unfortunately, Jean passed a few years ago. But she was the person that allowed me to start my program there. but the her legacy's continued on. Yes. With some great, great people there that I hope to introduce you to.
It's a wonderful thing to put the barn to use for. It's nice to have a barn. It's nice to have nice horses. But it's really nice to have something good to do with them, with the whole thing there. So connecting vets with horses, we assume that you're not talking about veterinarians.
No, veterans of the armed services, armed and military, right, and their families and friends, anyone associated with them as well.
Good. Now, with respect to your service, you're a 28-year Army veteran, and in a brief discussion with you before hosting you on the show here, I learned that you had a very interesting job in the Army. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, it changed, 28 years, it changed over time. I started out as an infantryman, so that's like the more of the direct contact, let's say, with the opposing force. And then at the latter part of my career, I became a civil affairs officer, which is more, you'd say, generally on the softer side of the military, but more related to humanitarian and the civilian populace. So you're actually trying to develop an understanding of who's on, in my case, in Afghanistan, who's on the battlefield? Who are they? What's their motive? What, you try to educate the leaders so they don't make decisions rash, irrational decisions and so forth. So it's like more operational awareness, but also humanitarian side. Like latter part of my career, I was part of a U.S. response in 2015 to an earthquake in Nepal that was fascinating, 7.8, 7.3, really. Caused a lot of destruction. So we were just trying to fill gaps initially after the earthquake with what we can provide, which are rotary wing helicopters, some people, communications, and some food and water. But that's in support of the host nation and in that case, the UN as well.
Well, the reason I wanted you to brief us on that job is because it sounds to me like it could have been a very high-stress job, walking into a village and not knowing whose side the village people were on.
I was in combat in 2005 in Afghanistan and then 2010. And after I left combat in 2005, you're in the life. I had three kids, married and work, still go back to your job after you're done. And about a year later, I started having these panic attacks. And I didn't, at the time, even understand what it was about. I didn't know anything about PTSD. And back then, we didn't get PTSD. We were brave, tough. And to this day, I still hear that, which is so sad. And but it took me 10 years to even recognize that I had maybe post-traumatic stress. We say injury, but disorder. And then I'll stop there. But then it was the horse that really woke me up that, hey, you do have a problem, buddy.
Now, that's what I was going to ask. How did you make the connection with the horse?
Well, I knew, with life, the long story on, I've always had this connection with horses. But even though I still to this day don't say I'm a horseman per se, I just love to be around horses, So I don't really have, I can't say I'm a rodeo guy or a rider, I ride him or whatever. I know a little bit about all that stuff, but it was in my family as well. My uncles and my aunt are thoroughbred long time. My uncle just passed. He was a Korean War veteran, which he has a similar story. He went 60 years without understanding he had PTSD, over 60 years. But he was a horseman, so it was always in my family. And I knew, I retired from the Army in 2016, and I was like, what I'm doing, and it's actually how you led the program, I was offered at that time a bunch of drugs. And I was, it's inside, I was like, no, I don't want to go that route, which I know many of our veterans have. And I don't really want to get into that side of it, but I was like, I know there has to be another path. Let me try to figure this out, which caused me to go inside. And it was before, I had already started like meditation and breath work, trying to go, I need to do something different than what I'm doing. I've been to therapy, saw a psychologist and so forth. And that started to help. But then again, I go, it was 2016 when I was first introduced to horses. And my first class I took was equine, it was massage. So I learned to massage a horse. And if you've ever massaged a horse, it takes about 90 minutes for one horse. So you're with that horse. And you know, at the end, I learned how to massage, which was great. But I was hanging with them for a long, like all day, and I wouldn't be tired. I was just like, I'd leave and I'd be euphoric. And that like planted the seed, like, hey, maybe I should be around these guys more, you know, guys and gals more. And then I started learning these other methods of training horses and so forth. And it was like the third class I took under this one method. It finally hit me. Like, I couldn't get it right. We're all perfectionists, you know, turn right, turn left. The horse just wasn't listening to me. And I just turned it around, and it was like, and through their instruction too, was like, what's the horse's problem? It's my problem. And it was like basic things. Breathe. I was all tight. The horse pick, they're so receptive to us, which now I, you know, they can pick up on your heart rate over 100 yards away. And they can synchronize with your heart rate. You know, you just don't, I had no comprehension of that. They're, you know, basic things. They're a mirror of us. So it just caused me, I mean, they live in the present. They're flight animals, you know. They're afraid of everything because everything eats them. What do they eat? Grass, hay, you know. And it's like that just opened up my mind that, hey, there's some things I'm missing here. And it really caused me to reflect and go inside. And I was like, okay, now I have a path. I have this meditation and breath work. I've been working hard, but I was missing something. And then it was the horse. And I combined the two. And that's the basis of my of the nonprofit I started. I just said, let me figure this out. And I went over to, I was looking for spots that would seem right for us. And I found that Gene Cavani, like you said, it was like an Oaks back then. And Gene was so generous to let me start. But in the beginning, they didn't know what to do with me. And I just would go there by myself and hang in a stall with horses. Now, the trainers to this day would still say they didn't know what I was doing there, but they knew I hung in there for like an hour. I was doing my breath work and meditation with the horse in their stall. And at the end of the day, an hour later, I felt better. And it kept happening. It was just so consistent. And that's like one of the questions I ask anybody that comes to our programs. I go, just note how you feel at the beginning. How you feel at the end? That's all I'm asking. We're going to teach you some tools maybe that might be able to help you if you're in a flight situation. You know, and I go, but just know how you feel. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, Michael, I hear, I just feel better. I'm calmer. My heart rate's down. I go, I came here. I was nervous. I didn't know these big horses. And you taught me a little bit about breathing and so forth that could get you down. But really, it goes back to what you said in the beginning, too. The horses, in my opinion, are the healers. How they do that, I still don't know.
Well, hold that thought because we're going to have to take a quick break. This is Charlie Jenks on the line with founder of the Connecting Vets with Horses, and that's what he does. He is a vet, and he connected with a horse, and it helped him. I had the experience myself. The horse does the healing. We're going to learn all about that if you stay tuned. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. Horses as healers. Could it be? Do stay tuned. We will be right back after these very important messages.
to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Can one be healed by a horse? Happened to me once. I was all frazzled up from being a community organizer and raising all kinds of havoc, kind of like kids do nowadays, the same thing. And one day I woke up to the fact that nothing was making sense anymore. And instead of turning to the drugs that were on the streets and everywhere and in the doctor's offices, I went back to Montana, got on a horse, and got healed. It seems to be something that's spreading around the country, this notion that one can be healed by a horse. Is that true, Charlie Jenks?
Michael, in my opinion, yes. I would say I don't know exactly how still to this point, but something happens, and I believe it in with myself for sure. It helped me in so many ways heal and continues to. I learn something new every time from them. I say healers and teachers, mm-hmm. but then I see the effects on others. And to go back to what was the adaptive riding part, what I was fascinated about going to the riding center and, you know, in Felton Jean Center, at the beginning was like I would see a child or a young adult with autism that would not even look at me at the start of their lesson. An hour later, they're talking to me, or not just me, everyone, engaging with people. And I was like, still relatively new. We're talking like 5 or 6 years ago. And I was just like fascinated about that. I see it with veterans, the same thing. Because we're kind of, depending on where we are, closed, kind of not connected. And what these horses do, there's research behind it now. Like, they connect to your heart. They have the research on it now. There's actually a center right. It was HeartMath up in I think Ben Lomond, right, or headquartered up there somewhere, that already has research on it. And the horse's heart is so energetically too so huge that's what they feel is what connects. And again, I don't know exactly, but there's something that happens, and that's in part why I called. You know, I named my program Connecting Veterans. There's so many connections that happen. But in some cases in life, I feel we don't slow down to even make that connection. And that connection with horses also then relates to people, right? If you can connect to a horse, if you can slow your mind down to get on their level, whatever that means, vibration, frequency, whatever that is, to where then they trust you, which is a hard thing. Because they're flight animals. A fly bothers them, right? And if they can trust you, which is what happens, like I'd ask you to come to one of our classes. In 20 minutes, you generally, the horse is kind of like, we'll either be in the pasture and a round pen is kind of like, why am I here? You're not working with, you know, I'm supposed to be work with, you know, it's supposed to be training. And then it's kind of like off on the side. 20 minutes into the class, in my opinion, we start getting more centered, whatever you want to call that. We call it grounded. We just use the breath to kind of get out of our head into our body. And then at around 20 minutes, the horse appears. Why? Again, I don't exactly know, but it happens so often. I've taken video after video of it, and usually is on one of the people. What are they doing? I don't know. But then I'll ask somebody after the class, like, what was your experience? And they'll go, you know, I had a stiff neck when I arrived, or whatever, I slept bad last night. And guess what? It's open now and I'm loose. And I go, and the horse was on their head, you know, by their neck the whole time, you know, for 20 minutes. And I go, I don't quite still understand it, but I'm open to it. And I think something's happening. And to answer your question again, I believe, I feel that they are healers.
Now, I have to ask you, what do vets think of this treatment when you say, hey, you can be healed by a horse, and they're going through all of these psychological medications or street drugs, or the alternatives are a million, but horse? How do you sell that to vets?
Yeah, I sell it to veterans. I kind of go in and I don't really talk about the healing part initially, even though I think that all of us know we need to change something in life. at the point they're even kind of thinking about coming to us. I kind of talked to them about, hey, we're going to do some exercises, which they know. We warm up prior to what we're doing. We kind of open up the body. We're doing all this in the presence of a horse. So in one class, I'll just take one horse, bring him in a round pen, and I start doing like a, what we would know as like physical training. And I kind of keep it consistent with what we did in the military. And I say, hey, we're just going to kind of loosen up, open up while this horse is here, you know? And then we're going to start getting into a little bit of breath work, which is a tool you could use if you're in this situation. And that's the one, the breath work too, in it's all in combination with the horse, but the breath work is what I get feedback from a lot of the veterans going, you know, I used that. I was in the post office and I started having this panic attack, or I was driving and I started to go to the breath. Or some of them even say, I hand out a keychain with a horse and one of my first veterans that's on it. And they go, I keep this keychain with me because it tells me to kind of stay present and breathe. And I go, yeah, that's so brilliant. So the horse is healing in one way, but it's also just a reminder to kind of check, because it's a practice. I still to this day, I get stressed or whatever. And I just go, what do you know? Breathe. And that's what I do. But it was the horse, again, I go back to 2017 or so, that woke me up to do that. I was trying to get this horse to move around a round pen by pushing it kind of more physically, when all I had to do was breathe, and it would have trusted me, you know, more. And I still didn't know what I was doing in a sense, but still I was like holding my breath. And it's like, breathe. That's something we can, it's within us all. And then there's certain specific ways to breathe. But then I would say I combine that with the horse, and I just go ask, tell the person, I go, all right, we're going to do this exercise. I'm going to teach you some, we'll work on some breath work. And then we're going to go into like the start of a meditation. We're using the breath, and, or we're going to do a little bit of what it's like a Chinese, exercise called Qigong. So it's still moving to where these people aren't totally, if it's, cause when I started this work in 2008, I was in Hawaii. I had no clue of what this Qigong stuff was. It was so opposite of who I was at the time. I was bigger, faster, stronger, wins, you know, type of person, knocked this battery off my shoulder. And then I was introduced to this something like holding this invisible ball. And I was just like, what are you talking about? But it didn't matter to me at that point because I felt something. I felt better. And I was like, well, all this other stuff I've been doing my whole life is not working for me. And then the drug part, like you saying too, I go, let me try something different. Let me just try to open my mind to something that maybe, oh, by the way, has been around for thousands of years in the Chinese culture, maybe help might help me. And then I combine the horse. Because, you know, the basic stance we do, which is based off of Chinese arts, you know what it's called? You're upright, you're on your feet. It's called the horse stance. It's like you're riding a horse. Your tail is tucked. And if you talk to horse riders, and I go into this structure, posture, they're like, yeah, that's how they teach me how to ride a horse. And I'm like, yeah, I'll go figure, huh? It's like they've known this for years. They don't tell you why, right, in some cases, you know, just so that's the most efficient way to ride a horse. But that, in my opinion, that's how you connect with the horse, by you being open and receptive. The horse is going, now I don't have this person like panicking on top of me. They're more open, they're more relaxed. We can flow as one, as opposed to being, hey, like I'm riding a bicycle, just turn right or left, you know?
You know, there's about a million things that are coming to my mind. Well, what I'd ask you about, my goodness, Charlie Jenks, this is really a lot of fun, because so much of what you say is ringing bells in my mind about deep breathing, about a horse. I'm just, as you were talking, describing about sitting on a horse, we've been sitting on a horse for a long time. Maybe there's something that's in our genes that makes that connection. But the big question that pops into my mind as I listen to you is that your therapy that combines a horse and breathing and meditation, all of that, is designed to give you control over yourself. And the drugs are the opposite. They're designed to take control of you.
Yeah. I would say it like a little differently, but I agree with what you're getting at. It's like you kind of take ownership of yourself. Like, you have the ability to change this situation. And that's where I feel like the potential is there for us, but then we numb it. Like, I won't get into specifics, but I've heard so many times over my life, such and such four-armed, you know, service, say, you know, Army, Navy, Marines, we don't get PTSD. You're like, what? Yeah, but then the same, and anecdotally, but it's the same people I'm out at night with, this is back years ago, are partying and drinking to where, like, they're passing out every night. They go, oh, well, we don't get PTSD because we're not dealing with it, right? So I think the part of the healing, at least in my, and I'm not a professional, I'm just telling you my opinion of my own experience, but now it's becoming consistent with other people too, is it took this breath work and the horse for me to wake up. I was numbing just like the rest of them in many ways in life, you know, alcohol and you name it. And I just wasn't dealing with the situation. Like I said, I had PTSD for 10 years before I even had a clue what it was. That wasn't part of what we do. But yet all of the symptoms, I was on my physical getting out of the Army, and this doctor was like, hey, buddy, have you been across the street yet? And I was like, what's across the street? And he's like, the mental health guys. He goes, you haven't been over there? And I was like, why? And he was just like, you meet 10 of the 11 or whatever, you're it. And I'm like, what? And I went right across the street and set up an appointment. And I was like, you're the first person that told me that, you know? And I'm like, wow. I was just floating through life, you know, which I think most people, like, I go back to my uncle, 60 years, alcoholism, 4 marriages. It was not until like 2007 that he realized he had PTSD. Oh. And he was a Korean War veteran in the early 50s that was overrun on a hilltop. He was a machine gunner's assistant, and was overrun and didn't know he had PTSD. I mean, that in itself, I was like, what?
Well, I guess I'm a veteran myself. And when it gets right down to it, I think I was probably in that situation too. As a young rabble rouser out of the military. When I went back to Montana and rode that horse through those long lingering Montana twilights, it was breathing. It was relaxing into the saddle and just letting it happen. Yes, it does work. And they, how do veterans come to you? Do they come to you, I don't need this?
In many cases, but also a lot of them, well, there's two things. I get a lot of the veterans. I have a great relationship with the vet centers where the counselors are. I believe you might know the vet centers. What I understand of them, they were started right after around the Vietnam War,
right.
And they were actually a nonprofit outside of the Veterans Administration. And then over time, they now are part of them, but still, in a way, kind of separate, but obviously they're within the big umbrella of the VA. So the counselors I've developed, and there's one where, you know, in the Santa Cruz area, there's one right off of 41st Ave in Capitola there. And they've been just amazing to me. And they'll kind of, we'll have like, we used to have like once a quarter open houses, and they'd bring 10, 12 people. Oh, now we have like group sessions where they'll bring 10. And then I started a relationship with the vet center over in San Jose. And it's generally been just like word of mouth. But we have a feeder, or the county dean down in the county, Dean Kaufman at the Santa Cruz County Veterans Service mm-hmm. Office. They've been amazing too, and they've just been the information. But what I want to highlight is why I started this was my brother, a veteran, took his life like 3 years ago, and 4 years ago.
Oh.
He was not in the system, and he would never. He was that proud infantryman, you know. That wouldn't be in the system. So I just wanted to, I want to try to reach people maybe don't want to go back into the system for many reasons, you know, and I know they're out there. And so that's why I started what I did, really, to formalize it and try to grow it. Was like, who can I help? And then it goes beyond the veteran. It's like, we always try to talk about the veteran, which is great, don't get me wrong. But what about the family that's been dealing with them? What about their friends or whoever? What about them? Who's taking care of them? No one. It's not within the VA system. There's very little. I'm in it. There's very little for the family. So I wanted to expand it beyond them. So, and like, how can we help more to keep these people whole? Which that's what we're getting. We're getting parents, partners, spouses, children, and I'll take all. And that's what I think I told you on the phone yesterday. I was trying to add something that the VA wasn't adding, well, doesn't have. Now, they have equine therapy funding, but that's for the traditional equine therapy of riding, groundwork, you know, which there's a lot of research on, like you're saying, and just your own experience. You get that. But I tried to create something outside of that. We do have that. That's within our program. But just come and hang with some horses. See how you feel. That's all I'm trying to do. It's like, it's very basic. Just come and hang with us. It's a magical experience.
Want to hold that. And then when we come back, I'd like to talk about the horses and the riders, or I should say the horses and the patients.
And
talk about the reactions of each to each other, because there's a two-way street there that is very interesting. And I suspect being where you are, you see a lot of it. So we'll pick that up when we come back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Charlie Jenks, founder of Connecting Vets with Horses. Stay tuned. It's just going to get better. Right back.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org, the food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org, farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get two friends to do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money, and when they're through, they'll get two friends and do it too. Do da doodle da da do 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 da do boom boom boom. There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy it'll make you blush. Pledge two local bucks each day. Get two others to pledge and play.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Herbal Connections, Maureen Rogers. I rate MetroFarm very high. All of the information is easy to understand and it reads really fast. You will get your money's worth out of MetroFarm. Egg economist, Dr. John Wyson.
Olson's MetroFarms enjoy competitive advantages which allow them to produce more crops per unit of higher quality at less cost than large-scale farms.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning Metro Farm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
We are back. This is the Food Chain. We're talking about horses healing people. Possible? Well, some say it is possible. And one of them, we Charlie Jenks, was with us today. Charlie, I'd like to pick up a guy named Monty Roberts, who became known far and wide as the horse whisperer, who developed, who insisted that horses communicate with their own language, which he calls equus. Your thoughts?
No, I agree. And Monty, who's just amazing, he is the gentleman. He had his program that I was telling you where I woke up. He has an amazing veterans program that's been running, I think, for over 12 years. They started with a documentary or a Discovery Channel mini documentary on it. And he's been working with veterans, and him and his family, his wife, Pat, and his daughter, Debbie, and they've been just amazing. And the support they have around them, the volunteers. So I would say yes. I mean, you have to, but what I think, and where Monty woke me up in many ways, is you don't really pay attention to the horse's communication most times. It's like what I tell people, is like people like think of them as like a bicycle. I'm just going to get on the bike and ride this bike. And where there's no connection. So even, you know, I've learned from other horse people, it's like, let's do some breath work together with the horse, and then maybe we can do something. But Monty would tell you and show you like ways just to pick up on, like, this horse doesn't want to be with you. I mean, we know the basic stuff, like, you know, the ears are pinned back or something. And you go, but a lot of people don't know that. They're still like moving forward, trying to pet this horse's nose, which, oh, by the way, the horse's eyes are on the side of their head. So when you pet their nose, they can't see your hand. Of course, they're going to have like a reaction to that, you know, especially if they're coming quick. Or Monty would say, just like, move with your hand through mud. That's what I try to tell people. Like, be conscious when you're around these things. Don't just come running up to them. You're probably going to get a lot more. In many cases, we've had horses that weigh, you know, 2,000 pounds. Even if it taps you, that's significant, a life event, you know? And it's like, but yeah, it's like picking up. I learned, that's what I say, I learn something new every time from them, because I usually pick up like, oh, he's telling me something, or she's telling me something. It's like, oh, but that caused me, because they live in the present, right? We don't live in the present. We're always thinking about like what I'm going to say next and so forth. It causes you to go, oh, just slow down. And we'll observe. So I agree. And I love Monty. And I still have friends. One of the guys in our program was just down there. Just a cool Vietnam era veteran. And he was just so pumped when he came back from there, from his program.
Well, Monty is quite the horse trainer, being the horse whisperer. And he developed quite an interesting way. He actually trained my uncle Walt Lindemann's bulldogging horse, Scotty, which became a Rodeo Hall of Fame horse. I was truly amazed to find him connected with Gene Cavami down here. But there he is. So connecting is really learning the language of the horse, then, is it not?
And I think so, in part, yeah. I think you got to learn, it kind of goes back to what we were saying before, too, is you have to learn about yourself, too. So it's like, yes, I can pick up on, a lot of people are perceptive enough that they can pick up on, but like, what are you doing at the same time? Again, I go back to the holding your breath. Like, the horse knows that. Like, why are you holding? Are you a tiger getting ready to kill me? That's what they feel, right? Anything bugs them. So it's like, why are you? I always look at them. They look, kind of look at you. Go, why are you doing that? And it's like, you don't need to do that. And that's why, like, usually a horse, especially with new people in our program, the horse, I just let them free in a round pen or in the pasture, and they're just free to do whatever they want. And if a big horse comes over to somebody new, I'll just say, the only thing I really say is breathe, breathe. Make sure you're breathing. We just talked about breathing. Breathe. And something happens differently with the horse. The horse is usually, they're not as relaxed. They take a breath. And it's so powerful. It's like instant feedback. They're a mirror. Like a lot of stuff I'm saying is what Monty taught me. They're a mirror of us. But most people don't think of it that way. Like, wait a minute, I'm in charge. I was just talking to a horseman this weekend. He's like, no, you have to correct him. You have to smack him on the nose. I go, what, is that the only way you have to do it? You know, let's think about this one. What did we do wrong? You know, we're not saying the horse nips you or something like that. Was that totally the horse's fault? I don't know. Those are the things that I just consistently think about now. But it's always like self-reflection. Like, where was I wrong in that situation? And that can be, you know, when the healing path again, it's like, where can I change something? You know? And I always tell people, I get so many people I only see like once or twice, but I'm like in our program, and I'm just like, well, if I can just plant a seed that maybe that might latch on, even a few years, hopefully before it's too late in this case, that maybe go, what was that guy telling me about Brett years ago? Because that's happened to me over my life. I was so hard-headed to this stuff in the beginning. Be like, I know. Even Monty's program, I went down there with the premise, I said, hey, I'm a veteran, you know, I kind of need help, but I'm just coming there to help others. You know, I really want to help others, like before helping myself, you know, that's what I'm getting to. It's like, no, I need to, and that's what the horse woke me up, like, dude, slow down. And I'm like, oh, and it took three of Monty's classes for that to even start to happen. And I'm a student. I'm still working on it, you know, 7 years later.
Now, it seems like Monty Roberts is a lot like Dr. Temple Grandin, in that these are two very special people who can think like animals. Wait a minute. I just did a radio show a week ago about animals thinking about death. And so as long as I have you here, do you think horses think
about death?
About anything.
Oh, anything. Well, it's interesting you're talking about death, though. We had this beautiful Hanoverian at the center, Rocky, who just passed. And he was big, 17-plus hands, 2,200 pounds. And the last time I saw him at the center, his health was getting really bad, and he could no longer help with the program, and they were just bringing him over right around the corner, Quail Hollow Park, where he was stabled there before he passed. But he gave me this look the last time I saw him at the center that I didn't know, because I didn't know he was that bad when I left. And it was a deep look in my eyes. And I was just like, I think now he was telling me goodbye. Like, this is probably it. But then I did see him one other time after that. Which I was just like, I walked away and I was just like, what was that? I was kind of like at the time, like, what is that about? And then I'm like, because, you know, I've learned again through people through Monty Roberts' program is like, they would say you breathe into a horse's face and they'll remember you for life. It's like they have that sense and they'll kind of look, you know, you say look into your soul or something like that. But I find that to be so true. Like, I come back after a month or 2 months and I've only met a horse once, and I breathe again into their face and they go, oh, I can kind of look on their face and like, oh, you again, you know, kind of, oh yeah, I got you. Wow. And I have nothing to prove that with, but I just go like, it just keeps happening. I go, there's a connection, but only if we slow down to make that connection. That's my premise from the beginning. It's like, we don't, I feel, jump on that. I learned the barrel race years ago, but I never thought of like that connection to the horse back then. I just listened to what the guy was telling me what to do. You know, that was about it, riding a bicycle. But now I would take that experience totally differently. I'm like, let me try. And even in Monty's program, not to knock it, but I would say that we'd go do this thing called join up. And I would ask him in the beginning, I said, can I just go hang with the horse I'm going to work with for about 15 minutes before? And they were like, yeah, kid, do what you want, you know? But I was just trying. I didn't even really know it at the time. We're talking, this is like 7, 8 years ago. I just was like, I just thought like, I wanted to try to connect with this horse. Because I knew it through my massage experience and stuff. it became like the basis of my program. But back then it was just like an intuition. I go, can I just go hang out with that horse in its stall for like 15 minutes? They're like, yeah, sure. Do what you want. Then bring him back over here and we'll start. And I go, yeah, cool. And that was it. And that's really the start of what I do. I just started doing that. And I did the same thing over in Gene's place, you know, for an hour. I would just go in and work and pet the horse and massage the horse. And I felt better at the end.
And let me ask you, we have a few minutes left. I wanted this one question that's lingering in my mind. Would you describe the interaction of autistic children and horses and how they were able to open up from that?
I can just tell you, that's not my field other than through observation, but I can tell you what I've now observed over time, because I see the children or the young adults in some cases. I've seen them so many times, the same kids too, same people. And I just like, and I talk to the, cause there's trained, you know, at Gene's place there's, and I want to introduce you to those people, Caroline and Kate and Shannon. But they're just great. They're certified PATH trainers, which they are the experts in that world. But my observation is like, and I think they've even told me, it's something to do with the vibration too of the horse when they're riding them. That is a connection again, right? So you synchronize this vibration, which then changes things. That's what I've heard. Again, I know there's some science behind it too, but I don't have it off the top of my head. But I'm just saying my observation is at the beginning, the kids are like looking down or they're more in a, like a panic state or just very like moving, you know, fast. And then at the end, they're talking, they're smiling. I just sit there and go, wow. From the beginning, I would say, this is magical. But it's not really, you know, like again, with respect, the horses are the healer. What exactly? I don't know, but there's an effect. That's all I said. I just sit there and go, oh my goodness. It's beautiful.
Have you ever seen any clinical psychologists take this on and do a study?
I haven't myself, but I could ask Caroline too. I'm assuming it's out there. I mean, at their center alone, they also have occupational therapists. And I know of a lot of people like practitioners that are working to get into this world of just to say, actually there's a medical doctor, Beverly Kane, I met over in right by Stanford. She was part of the Stanford medical school, but she's a horse person and she does something. Now she's a medical doctor, but she brings her clients to a tack room on the, if you know, Webb Ranch over there and just, Portola, was it that chemist from Stanford, huge branch. And she has a tack room that's actually her office. And she does her practice in like counseling and so forth, however, you know, exactly she does it with a horse present. And that's kind of what I see a lot of too. Like these professionals, it's in that setting. They're not like necessarily saying like, we're going to do this with a horse. The horse is just there. And that's what I find the magic too. With these outside, and I know more and more, and I have a lot of therapists, counselor friends that are trying to get into that world of just being in that environment.
So that it works is obvious to you and to those who are healed by horse. The rest of us are out here living on cement, and television and bad drugs and bad food. How do we get tuned in to a horse?
How do we get connected to him?
Yeah.
And just in general, yeah. I would say in any experience you can get, any opportunity there is, because you know there's a whole other side of which I've just started to partner with these other nonprofits from rescue organizations, like in just go volunteer, like in Watsonville where we have so I come up there, I think you know this, but I moved down to San Luis Obispo. Actually, my ex-wife passed away, and I moved to be with my adult children. But When I go up there once a month on Thursdays at 10, we have said Pregnant Mare Rescue in Watsonville, right by the airport. And we have a class there. That's open to anyone, really. But what I offer to people is go volunteer with an organization like that. So you can do something good for the organization. But I also say you're probably going to get more out of it than you're given to in many cases. The feedback, if, again, we slow down. We had a magical experience.
Got to slow down. Yeah. Otherwise, you'll frighten the horse, and the horse will shut down.
Yeah.
Well, Charlie Jenks, we're just about out of time, doggone it. How do we connect with you?
Well, you can connect through my website, connectingveteransandhorses.com, or I'm on Instagram, and there's ways to connect with me there.
Well, let's start with connecting veterans connecting horses. Vets.
No, veterans.
Connectingveteranswithhorses.com. Go take a class. Connect with a horse. Breathe deep. Shake Charlie's hand. And get rid of some of that anxiety that is eating us all up.
Yeah. It's like you said, everyone is going. That's what we find. It's great that we focus on veterans, but if I can get a person with
everybody horses, every has person. It. Charlie Jenks, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you all for tuning in. Food Chain Radio.
Thank you, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.